one page.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I think that I want to start out perhaps by offering an amendment to delete Section 4.
Senator, do we have a quorum?
Oh, do we have? We don't have a quorum yet.
We need 7 for a quorum?
Yeah.
Michelle's here? How many do we have, Katie? Corey is here? 4, 5, 6. We're short one for a quorum. Oh, no, Tomasoni's here. We have a quorum.
Yes.
Okay, what's your proposal again?
Madam Chair, I'd like to, on page 2, I'd like to delete Section 4. It's okay. The provision that gave this what we were hoping was a policy bill, a fiscal note. So we'll remove it from the bill.
Okay, Senator Brubling moves that Section 4, Senate File 1540, be deleted. And that's an author's amendment, so we'll just do that. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
And then one more small amendment, the A1 amendment. And it's on page 1, line 25, very simply inserting in the group that the textbook publishers would also be part of the group that the Office of Higher Education would consult with as they're working on the textbook issue.
And where does this go? After of?
After.
Page 1, line 24, after of. Where's publishers?
Yeah, in the amendment.
No, but where's it go in the bill?
Oh, right there.
It doesn't seem to fit in the bill.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Where? The office must work with representatives.
Oh, textbook.
Represent. It says after of insert with representatives of
comma.
Oh, I get it. Okay. Okay. There's supposed to be a comma after textbook publishers. So go before the quote.
Yeah.
Before the quote. Senator Roebling moves the A1 amendment. Are though anyone else confused? Just me. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay.
Okay, Madam Chair. The first provision I can explain more easily than the second, which we'll let Ms. Grimes from the Office of Higher Ed explain. But the first section has to deal with an advisory council that would help the Office of Higher Education on past textbook legislation. We have passed our own textbook legislation, and the federal government passed textbook legislation, and this advisory council would help sort of merge those recommendations or the legislation from both bodies so that we have a general standard for what we're trying to achieve in our textbook pricing and availability issues. And perhaps Ms. Grimes can explain it a little further, but we're trying to include the different groups with interest in this issue, and they are listed in the legislation.
Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Senator Ms. Grimes.
Patricia Grimes from the Office of Higher Education. Basically, what we're trying to say is that we met with the students, we consulted with the students in coming up with this language, and the idea is to have the stakeholders work collaboratively to make sure that the pricing information provided by the textbook publishers is collected and disseminated in a way that's efficient and effective so that the students and faculty members get the information they need about textbook prices.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Sections 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
This has to do with who is a Minnesota resident when it comes to tuition, being eligible for tuition reciprocity. In 2005, the legislature repealed a number of statutes that had to do with funding formulas for MinSCU and the University of Minnesota, and one of those included a definition of who was a Minnesota resident. And our tuition reciprocity statute used to cross-reference that definition. So now we need to have something else there because that got repealed.
Okay.
So what we're putting in place is the definition that we use for the state grant program. Same definition. It's really just continuing what we currently do. And then the underlined language has to do with we occasionally have someone who sort of appeals whether or not they are a Minnesota resident for reciprocity because the standard really is you're supposed to live in Minnesota for a year before you're considered a resident. Well, if they moved here because of a spouse's job or to get medical care or something like that, and they can document that, and they started school right away because they didn't know they were supposed to wait a year, they sometimes appeal that. And so a handful of cases come to the director of our office each year. And all of this really just continues current practice.
It wasn't the primary reason. Ms. Grimes, if a student from another state comes here to go to school and they're considered a non-resident, do they have to maintain that non-resident status the entire time they're in school? Or after a year, do they get to switch to residency status?
Madam Chair, generally the way it works is that if they go to school, they're supposed to be here for a year without going to school more than half time.
Mm-hmm.
And after they've lived here for a year without going to school more than half time, then they are a resident.
Okay. But if they're a full-time student, they stay a non-resident.
Technically, yes.
Does that include graduate school then, too?
I believe so, yes.
Oh. Mr. Albrecht said it's yes because it applied to him. I always change that. Okay, I think this is the shortest Office of Higher Education bill I've ever seen.
Madam Chair, the committee helped us with quite a bit of policy legislation in the last three sessions, and
we've been getting
we didn't have
cleaned
as much
up.
That we needed to get done this
right,
year.
Right, that's great. We've been doing our job then.
So, Madam Chair, I don't know if there's... Okay.
Okay.
Change it later.
Okay.
Are you laying over for inclusion now?
I was just going to adopt it, but I'll lay it over if we're not ready to go with it. Mr. Fuller is wondering why we're putting this report in permanent law instead of session law, since it expires.
Madam Chair, that's a very good question. Since we were amending statutory law, we assumed we needed to do it in statutory law, but mm-hmm. we could certainly take your advice on that point.
Just make it part of session law, so you can do that technically. You would just adopt it and say it in session law.
Yeah, are we going to move it out of the
No, 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 it can go in the omnibus bill.
I'll just say, yeah, we'll adopt it.
Put in session law. Okay. Does anybody else have any questions or concerns about the bill? Okay, then one more. Okay, Ms. Grimes, what does July 1st, 2010, what does that modify? Is it modify the requirements?
I'm trying to refresh my memory here.
On implementation text requirement.
Oh, the federal law becomes effective July 1, 2010. The new federal law.
Is that clear? You want to say which is effective?
Yeah, we'll fix it. Maybe like that become effective or something like that.
Okay, well, what I'd like to do is actually move this into the omnibus bill, but make the put it in session law and this section and kind of clarify some grammatical thing, which will become effective July 1st, 2010, or something that clarifies that. And Ms. Grimes, you could talk to Mr. Fuller about
about working on that. Glad to do that.
Okay, Senator Corrine, you ready to vote?
Yep.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I have no problem leaving it for the omnibus bill, but mm-hmm. we don't have any rule this year like we did last year when they kept trying to get policy out of the budget bills. Are we okay with that?
We certainly could have considered sending policy bills separately, but the House is going to keep a policy article in their bill. So we might as well, too. But no, we won't have an issue like that.
Okay.
No. I think it would only be an issue if the House had an issue with it, and the Finance Chair doesn't. Okay?
All right, then, Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 1540 be recommended to pass and be included in the omnibus bill.
With the technical corrections
I
mentioned.
With the technical corrections and as amended.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion
that really felt good.
I'm told, Senator Thomas Thoney, that 1315 still isn't ready for discussion, so I'd like to lay that over. And why don't we have Senate File 1506, which again is just for discussion, but we want to hear about what's going on.
Listen to these guys for a second on
1315. Okay, Senate File 1315, then we'll listen to these guys for a second. But only for a second. As long as you're here, but I did tell Senator Tomasoni that, you know, when we, and he should have probably gone with you, when you meet with our staff and our staff has suggestions, they're as if the suggestions are coming from me. And so it's a good idea to pay attention to the suggestions because, I mean, the staff knows what we think is realistic and what we think we can do. So I'm going to send you back to work on the bill some more and ask Senator Tomasoni to also be involved with that.
I didn't know that, Madam Chair.
Now you know.
Now I know.
But anyway, I
had a discussion with both these gentlemen, and go ahead and explain what you said to me about this amendment and about your thoughts on the bill.
Right.
We're not going to send an unlimited bill to the tax committee. We're not doing our job if we do that.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, we understand, and we thank you for your consideration of it. We had hoped that we were I guess what I would say is we want to work through the right process and work with everybody in doing this. And so we appreciate your offering up, John, as a resource, and we'll continue to work with anyone and everyone basically to put in the condition that you would feel comfortable moving it out of committee. So,
and it may not be exactly what Maine is doing. It may be a little limited, and
okay.
It may be that we look at it in 2 years and see how it's going. But
okay.
But I think we, given the budget situation that we're facing, a $4.4 billion shortfall,
mm-hmm.
you know, frankly, we don't know if the tax committee, which would have to pay for this, will even consider it.
Mm-hmm.
But we certainly don't feel it's responsible to send them something that's unrealistic. We'd like to send them something that we think realistically they could do.
Okay. Well, then, Madam Chair and members, again, we're prepared to work on it. We'd hope some of the amendments were addressing some of those concerns, but certainly we do understand there's more work that needs to be done. So thanks for your time on it, and we'll continue to work with you and your staff. Thank
okay.
you.
All right, thank you. Then 1315 is laid over. And Senator Tomasoni, we want to hear what you're doing in commerce with liquor.
I've already done it, Madam Chair.
I know. This
I know.
Is discussion only.
Oh, Madam Chair, well, when we initially had a conference committee on the stadium, one of the amendments that we put on the bill was to allow liquor sales in the football stadium. And I believe that what we've heard now is that we said the Board of Regents should make a decision as to how it should be done. The Board of Regents has now come out with a kind of a caste system, liquor system at the stadium, where the people, 1,000 people can drink, but the other 49,000 can't, and so the suggestion in my bill is that they take a look at that policy again and make it fair for everybody that's going to the stadium. Initially, the concern was actually raising money to pay for the stadium, and liquor sales seemed to be a way to go. And since the University of Minnesota has been playing in the Metrodome since 1985, I believe it is, and they've been having football games with liquor sales, and they've actually modified their liquor sales to the point where you can only buy one person can buy one beer at a time.
Right.
They are doing it now, and they have been doing it. And the Metrodome is the same distance from the center of the campus as the new stadium is, and so the logistics haven't changed that much. And so it seems to me reasonable that if you're going to let somebody drink in the stadium, that everybody should be able to drink in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
The number of students that will be at games will be about one-fifth of the attendance, and so most of the people there will either be will probably be adults that will be of legal drinking age. And so it seems to me that the opportunity should be afforded everybody, or else they make a rule that nobody can do it. But you know, I think the second option is probably a bad decision. So,
well, I did want to hear from the university on this as to what their position is.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Michelle.
As our friends come up, Senator Tomasoni, what do they do in Williams or Mariucci right now?
I can tell you that. I don't know.
Welcome to the committee.
There's a lot of alcohol there.
I don't think there is either.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon.
Madam Chair, before they start,
Senator Tomasoni.
I just want to point out that Mr. Maturi is a Chisholm guy, and Chisholm just won their basketball game at the state tournament. So,
congratulations. And it must be high school basketball time because it's been snowing.
That's right.
You're right.
He was a basketball player. I wasn't, but he was a basketball player.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Kathy Brown. I'm Chief of Staff to the President at Minnesota.
And Madam Chair, members, I'm Joel Maturi, the Director of Athletics at the University of Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you. Essentially, our position on this issue is that we have really since the inception of the stadium, and Joel and I both have been involved in that ever since this idea came up nearly 6-7 years ago, have had the idea that we are creating a collegiate atmosphere on our campus, different from what is at the Metrodome, which is really more of a pro sports arena that we do play in. We are very excited and very appreciative of the legislative support we've had to bring Gopher football back to campus and create a collegiate atmosphere. In that collegiate atmosphere, what we're really trying to create is a community. We're bringing back friends and alumni of the university, getting them involved in our campus, creating a place for our students and their families to come and attend games in a collegiate environment that's respectful and, cheering for the home team and having a good time. A large part of our planning has also been around our neighborhoods and, again, trying to ensure that bringing football back to campus is respectful of our neighborhoods and that we're not creating dynamics around the game that are going to be troublesome in the neighborhoods, such as excessive drinking or partying or littering and that type of thing. We've worked very hard with our neighborhoods who have been very cooperative. We're pleased with our relationship there to create a great game day experience, and we're very, very excited about that opening up this fall. As a part of our stadium, we have created premium seating, which is suites, and there are some club seating and also some loge and premium seating in the stands. Almost every college campus in the country that has a football stadium has a similar kind of seating configuration. And I think all but one or two prohibit sale of alcohol in the public concourse, but probably the majority, I don't have an exact number, but the majority of those do have alcohol sales in the premium seating, the suite and premium seating area. So the direction we're going is very consistent with what is the national standard around this. And part of the reason it's such an important standard to uphold is that we are, first and foremost, an educational institution. And we have, 50,000 students on our campuses. And one of the major social problems that students have is excessive drinking or binge drinking or just drinking to excess on occasions. So we have spent a lot of time on our campuses trying to be thoughtful and to have programs, educational programs and support for students, trying to ensure that we are creating an environment around campus that is safe and educational for our students around the use of alcohol. Not selling in the public concourses is very consistent with that philosophy. We, as Senator Tomasoni said, about 10,000 of the seats in the stadium will be for our students. Some of those students will be of age. Many will be underage. And so we are trying to create an environment in the stadium which is very consistent with the educational environment we have on the whole of our campus. However, as in most public venues that have ticketed events, there's, a different seating arrangements, different configurations, and almost everyone who pays a higher premium for a ticket gets some additional privilege. And sometimes that's a seat closer to the field or closer to the stage or whatever. Sometimes it's additional food amenities, and sometimes it's the ability to purchase alcohol in your suite or in your club area. So our position is that we are headed in a direction that we think is very consistent with the national norms, very consistent with our educational message, and very consistent with what we think our fan base is willing to accept. I'll ask Joel if he has any additional comments.
Please. Thank you, Kathy. Madam Chair, members, first of all, for the efforts of many of you, certainly led by Senator Michelle and others and the governor and the great support of our donors and the corporate world, we wouldn't be opening up TCF Bank Stadium 174 days from today. It'll be an excitement. It'll be a return to campus, which we believe will energize our campus, change our culture for our students, for our alumni, for our communities, and really for the state of Minnesota, we believe for many generations. As Vice President Brown stated, to be very consistent with the practice of almost every institution that I'm aware of, athletics in our culture in America is really the window to the university. We are extremely visible, and everything that we do is scrutinized, whether it's something positive or on occasion something that's not so positive. The biggest concern on every college campus in America is the use and oftentimes the abuse of alcohol. Sometimes people of age and oftentimes people not of age. We look at that responsibility of being as visible as we are and take that seriously, and we do it in many forms. For example, though we are dependent upon corporate signage for revenues to support our 25 sports program, we do none of that with alcohol, although there be some significant dollars. Though there would be advertisement in the programs that we have for our very visible sports, which, again, is very necessary for us for the financial wherewithal of our athletics program, we do none of that with people who distribute alcohol. The same thing is true even of radio advertisement. Though it would be, again, another significant revenue stream for us, we don't do it. And we don't do it because we don't believe it's consistent with the message of the academic institution and the reasons that we exist on our campus.
Mr. Materi, what about tobacco?
We do not do that for tobacco either. Okay. I appreciate that, Madam Chair. We do not do any alcohol or tobacco advertisement or signage in our intercollegiate athletics programs in any form. What we have done, because there is a necessity, there is a financial reality to providing and opportunities for our 750 student-athletes in our 25 sports. And one of our revenue generators, obviously, is to make sure that we service our significant donors and those individuals who are able to purchase premium or preferred seating. And one of the ways that we've done that with TCF Bank Stadium is to sell our suites at a significant amount, our loge boxes, as Vice President Brown referred to, and our indoor and outdoor club seating. We have actually done that in Williams Arena and Mariucci on campus also, but because we have not had the ability to sell the alcohol in our club sections, we actually give it away to those of age. And as Vice President Brown will tell you, when I became the athletic director in 2002 and was going through my first year, it was a concern of mine because I believe I was concerned about that leading to abuse. For people who maybe have attended games at Williams or Mariucci and people who have been had access to the club room, you know that might be something that's not healthy, though we do our very, very best to monitor. And fortunately, during the 7 years that I've been here, we've not had issues that I'm aware of. But I believe it's an issue waiting to happen. I would much rather welcome the opportunity to sell it in those premium seating areas so that we could control it even significantly more, still generate the revenue from the access of the people who have the ability to go to those places, and also therefore control the distribution of the alcohol in our club and in our premium seats.
So, Mr. Materi, you don't sell it because the regions haven't authorized it?
We do not have the ability at this time. The new policy that has been okayed for us does give us now the opportunity to do that.
Okay.
With the passage of the bill for the stadium, was also included an alcohol provision there, which would now allow us to sell this. Obviously, we're here because some people feel that it should be there for being able to be sold to everybody and not just a certain segment. I'm respectful of the Minnesota way of trying to be equitable and fair and similar, but it would be tremendously inconsistent with the mission of the institution, the mission of our intercollegiate athletics program, and the mission of almost every athletics program that I'm aware of in the nation.
And Mr. Materi or Ms. Brown, if this became law, what do you think the regents would then do? Would they accept it? Or
Madam Chair, members of the committee, of course, it's difficult for me to say with any certainty what they would do, but I think our members of the board would have significant reservation about whether they would be willing to sell alcohol throughout the stadium or the Mariucci Arena or Williams Arena for the reasons we've been describing.
They stay with the present policy of it's free.
Correct.
No.
Madam Chair, that would be my belief.
Do you know how much of an income generator this would be for the university if those figures been done?
I do not know the specific. Madam Chair, I do not know the specific number for the alcohol itself.
Chair.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, you don't want to be a senator.
No.
Joel, Mr. Maturi, are there any NCAA guidelines or rules regarding alcohol and intercollegiate facilities?
Mr. Maturi.
Madam Chair, Senator, there are for NCAA events. For example, this week, Senator Tomasoni's alma mater will be playing there tomorrow, and they hope on Saturday in hockey for the NCAA regional, which the University of Minnesota is hosting. Their policy is that there can be no alcohol signage, and their policy is that there can be no sales of alcohol. However, they do allow it in the premium seating areas of a facility. That is true of every NCAA collegiate event, Final Four, Frozen Four, whatever level it is. So in essence, we would be very consistent with the NCAA policy. The NCAA does not have a policy, however, to prohibit us to do it during the regular season, even though they do not allow it during NCAA championships. They leave that up to institutional decisions.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Michelle.
Mr. Maturi, if we were to do a little tour of Big Ten football stadiums, how many, if any, allow for general sales of alcohol?
Madam Chair, Senator, the answer to that is zero.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I know there was a temptation, a big temptation back in 2004, 2005, when the university was trying to figure out how to raise the money to build such a facility, and frankly, I think it's impressive that they were able to raise the funds while not relying on things like alcohol. I think it's a tough line to cross. I mean, I'll be the first to say I spent too much of my college career in fraternities as opposed to the library.
We noticed.
You know,
but Madam Chair, I just, you know, I think this is going to be one of the, I think this is going to be one of the best days of 2009 when they open up that stadium, and they don't need alcohol to make it a great day.
Well, I thought you were going to say it'd be nice to have some champagne.
We'll stop by your house, Madam Chair. But I, you know, in this kind of a year, in this kind of recession, mm-hmm. I think that first game in September is going to be great, and they don't need this extra step and this extra bit of money.
Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
Do you think we should allow tailgating?
They're not allowing tailgating, are they?
I don't know.
Well, I don't think you can prohibit that.
Are we allowing tailgating?
Madam Chair, Senator, we are allowing tailgating. We are being restrictive in certain areas as to what it would be done, and obviously very, very well supervised, but there will be tailgating limited hours as well.
Will we be giving breathalyzers to the fans from the other teams that are coming in from Iowa and Wisconsin before we let them in the stadium?
No, I actually did talk to some students, and it was very interesting because they are actually concerned, those that live nearby in fraternity houses, that there could be spillover because of the lack of alcohol.
People would go.
They'll go elsewhere. On the other hand, they said that right now at the Metrodome, beers are $8. You can only buy one, and they're long lines. So it's really, it's expensive for students, and it's not very convenient. You know, you miss the game while you're waiting in line. So there is really limits there.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I don't understand or help me with the fraternity concern, because right now we have dozens of hockey and basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
Right on fraternity row, basically.
Right.
And there's a suggestion that there's some, and they don't sell alcohol at those.
Well, I don't think the University of Minnesota students are here today, but they did Maybe I didn't get a real clear picture, but one gentleman mentioned he belonged to a fraternity three blocks away, and I guess just the fact that there will be so many more fans, like 40,000, 50,000, whatever the capacity is. And it's pretty crowded. It is crowded right now. I was at an event at the McNamara Alumni Center on a game night, and I couldn't believe it. You know, and that's just, you know, from hockey and basketball.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Tomasoni,
there's all kinds of issues around the arguments we're hearing here. I think if you care about binge drinking, you'll let them drink in the stadium because they will binge drink before they go to the game.
That's
if
the
there
argument,
is no
yeah.
if there's no alcohol in there. And you know, when the U went to the Metrodome in the first place, they went for the professional atmosphere, and now we're back to the collegiate atmosphere. Idea and since you've been getting by pretty well with beer in the stadium all these years at the Metrodome, you've proved that you can do it. but the part that really bothers me is that we're going to let the significant donors drink and the significant student donors won't be allowed to drink, and the rest of the people who come to the game aren't considered to be significant donors. You know, and so it's a fairness issue. And
well, Senator Thompson, I think either way the significant donors are going to be drinking.
Either way,
it's either going to be given to them for free or they're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of going to happen.
Well, also in other stadiums, I mean, there's probably, I don't know this for sure, but there's probably a spot in Mariucci where the average Joe can go and buy a drink, but you just have to drink it in there, and then you can go back into the stadium after you've had it. Because I've been in some stadiums where they sell alcohol. And you have to drink in the bar, but then you can go back into the stadium. You can't bring it into the stadium. So there's alcohol being sold in these stadiums all across the country. It's just a matter of whether or not you can have it inside the stadium. And I don't know if that's a good compromise or not. I don't think it is at a football game. But at any rate, I think there's a fairness thing here, and I'm certain that when we did the amendment to the stadium bill, that the intent was that if you were going to allow alcohol in the stadium, that they were going to allow it for everybody.
Senator Lynch, did you have something you wanted to say? Oh, okay. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to offer that it's a little ironic that in this room, actually, another committee, the Healthcare Committee, is looking at ways that the legislature can discourage alcohol consumption because we've identified alcohol abuse, tobacco abuse, obesity, and diabetes as some top cost drivers for the healthcare system. And while we're not talking about making those things illegal, we're talking about different ways where we can be discouraging use of these substances and trying to step away from diabetes and deal with obesity issues and encouraging healthy choices and healthy living and healthy lifestyles. And at the same time, a different committee, a different room, is talking about expanding opportunities for uses of those, well, at least the alcohol piece. So it's interesting and sort of brings to mind when sometimes people accuse the legislature, right hand's doing one thing and left hand is doing the opposite. So I just want to offer that to this committee to consider.
Well,
Senator Tomasoni?
Yeah, I'm sure some of us think that we're actually encouraging less drinking by allowing them to drink in the stadium.
I understand that.
Senator Sharon?
Just playing off of what Senator Tomasoni talked about in terms of his gut reaction, you know, we can talk about what increases or decreases drinking. But the central thing I heard you reacting to, Senator Tomasoni, was that you think that this has a discriminatory quality to it, that some are allowed to drink and others are not. And to that question, to that subject, I wonder about that. How did you see the thinking develop that you thought it was a good idea to allow anybody, if you want to create this atmosphere in this collegiate process, why not have it be an alcohol-free system rather than just have one group rather than another drink? Some can and some can't.
Madam Chair, Senator, these are debates that obviously we've had extensively. We've looked at best practices of our other colleagues. There are 117 what is known as a Division I-A athletic programs, football programs in the country. And I believe out of the 117, I'm only aware of one that allows alcohol to be served in the general populace of the stadium. In talking to those campuses, the reasoning is, and I think it's consistent with ours.
Can I interrupt you for just a moment? I neglected to introduce David Metzen, and I see he's leaving now, which reminded me.
I can't believe those Regents passed that, by the way.
Yeah. We know Dave, Mr. Metzen, as a Regent for the last 12 years, who was a retired Regent, but he has been appointed by the governor to fulfill Susan Hegarth's seat with the Office of Higher Education. So he came by to say hello to us, and I said hello to him before the meeting and promptly forgot. So welcome, and we'll look forward to working with you.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you. Thank you. Good luck. With your winter time.
Madam Chair, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Maturi.
Let me just be clear. What I hear you saying is that you sort of made your decision based on what others were doing, but...
No,
but I want to understand whether or not.
I don't know if I was able to finish,
Mr. Maturi.
Because of that, certainly, the point I was trying to make is number one, we did look at best practices, which I think is a good policy to follow, and in doing so, we want to be consistent with our mission, consistent with what Senator Ropes was talking about, in our statement to our students, our expectations to our student population, because that is really what we're there to serve. And also the realization that it's pretty common and pretty consistent in most things that you and I deal with in life, that there are certain sometimes opportunities that sometimes a certain group of individuals have access to something that others do not. And when we made the decision to sell suites, to sell loge boxes, and to sell other premium seating opportunities in TCF Bank Stadium, we realized that to generate the kind of revenue that was necessary for us to sell those particular premium seats, it would probably be necessary to have alcohol available to that group, whether it be through sale or through other means, as we now do it in our lofts, in our suites, in our club rooms, in Mariucci and Williams Arena.
Senator Michelle.
I don't know if this will be satisfying to Senator Sharon. I think that's kind of the key question here. It strikes me that on the football field, Mr. Maturi is trying to compete against, Iowa and Ohio State. With the stadium, and specifically with the suites, they're really competing against the XL Arena and Target Center for, high-end and corporate dollars. And if you are one of those people, Senator, you're not going to get a suite in every one of those venues.
There might be any.
So I think it's probably the competition at that level for those dollars. They're trying to lock people in for multiple year commitments, and it's a substantial portion of the revenue raised for the stadium. So I'm certain there was no intent to discriminate, but it is. I think they were trying to balance a different kind of competitive world for that kind of entertainment dollar.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, what is the percent of seating that's available in the suites compared to the percent that will be in the main part of the stadium?
Madam Chair,
Mr.
Senator,
Maturi.
It's about 2,500 seats of our little over 50,000 seats will have premium seating opportunities, and therefore the ability to, if it were to happen, either purchase or receive alcohol.
Senator Sharon.
I'm not clear because the words are filtered differently through me. When you talk about premium seating, are these enclosed suites? Or are some of these seats out in the general open air of the dome stadium?
Mr. Maturi.
Madam Chair, Senator, some of them are in the general area of the stadium, yes. That would be called the outdoor, club seats, as we would term
them. Are they, like, roped off, or are they bigger?
They'll be in a designated area, but they would not be separated.
individuals, Senator Pappas and Senator Sharon,
Brown.
Individuals who purchased alcohol in the club, however, would not be able to take it back to the general public seating. Mm-hmm. So there is an indoor club. There's a loge seating, which is a demarcated area. Then there's club seats, which individuals in those seats can go into the club, but they will not be able to take it back out into the general seating area.
I think you probably have enough information.
Yeah.
I have an email that I received from a person who lives nearby, and she said, I'm a resident life director for the Dinikin properties at Stadium Village, which houses one of the largest concentrations of students adjacent to the stadium. Additionally, I'm the president of the Stadium Village Commercial Association. Based on my over 20 years of experience on 5 campuses in 3 states, you are right on the money to make the alcohol available throughout the stadium. Having it segregated by wealth is like a caste system. My biggest concern is binge drinking pregame because students and other cheap seat fans are not able to buy one or two drinks during the game. And she just included that it was her personal opinion. But it seems like she's had a lot of experience with it and is expressing her opinion to allow everybody to be treated equally.
Okay, any more comments? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've been to a lot of football stadiums in the last years. And I was never aware of any of them selling alcohol, but I never was in premium seating. We were with the parent section. And I guess I was relieved that the alcohol wasn't in the stadium where I was. We did tailgate and had fun outside beforehand. But also when you
Did you have alcohol when you tailgated?
Yes. There was only one campus. University of California, Davis is a completely alcohol-free campus, and you couldn't have alcohol tailgating, but every place else permitted you to bring in some, alcoholic refreshments if you wanted to. But, I think, too, that oftentimes it's a kind of, if they are tailgating heavily beforehand, which I hope they don't go to excess, but I've seen that, at least they have some time to sober up before they head for home, which makes the driving around the facility a lot safer after the game too, potentially, and I value that they may be driving home a little more sober.
Will you be allowing alcohol in the tailgate area?
Madam Chair, Senators, yes, there will be designated areas that alcohol will
for be if they're legal if they're over 21.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Seems kind of contradictory in some ways. Okay, well, the situation with this bill is it's in the omnibus liquor bill, and it's on the floor. So if members have issues or concerns with it, then we would have to deal with it in the committee of the whole. I did not want to pull the whole liquor bill into the higher ed committee, so I was grateful that Senator Tomasoni and others cooperated in letting us have this discussion so we'd have a better understanding of the issues. Okay, then the meeting is adjourned. And the state grant working group is going to meet right now in my office.